Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back to the Intercooler podcast, and we're doing it properly this time. For only the third time in a year, Andrew, we're doing a podcast in person.
Yes.
We're also filming this one properly, so it should look great if you're watching it on YouTube or on Instagram or whatever. We'll come back to where we are in a moment, but there are some great cars in shot and some really great cars elsewhere. Before we get started, we just have to show our mugs, our TI. These days, yes. You and I are never more than a few feet away from a TI mug. We're very fond of these. Less said about the colour of your tea, the better. Now, with this podcast, we're going to discuss some of the interesting cars that we've been driving recently. There's some sort of high-end metal in there. Before we do that, though, we're going to talk about us, okay? Us. We've got some big news, right? And we're really excited about this. We've been teasing our listeners and our readers over on Instagram with this new project that we've been working on. We've been teasing them for months about it. And I'm beginning to think that some people thought it would never happen. It was all just chat. We've already changed the name from Drive Nation to the Intercooler. That was just the start. And we can finally say today that we are launching an app, the Intercooler app. It's the world's first digital car magazine delivered as a subscription app. So a bit of a groundbreaker, I think, and we're properly excited about it.
We are. I mean, it's extraordinary. It feels to us like we've been working on this for years. And like, I guess, all things that have not been done before, you know, you kind of sit there thinking, I wonder if there's a reason for that. And maybe it's a crazy idea. But we actually think, don't we, that the idea of getting together a fantastic bunch of journalists, you know, frankly, the best motoring journalists we can persuade to write for us. And as we'll get to in a minute, it is a pretty impressive bunch. And then to put them into a format which people can access, not once a month or once a quarter or whenever, but wherever they are, whenever they are there, every single day, new stuff up there. To us, that's an immensely appealing idea. And the reason we are doing it, the reason we've decided to do it, is that the way the world is these days is that there is such an avalanche of stuff being launched all the time that the motoring media, be it a magazine or a website, and I mean no criticism by this, it's just the way things are, but they just have to get through it. It's a bit of a sausage machine, review of everything that comes out. And the only problem with that, I guess, is what sometimes gets lost is the thing that made you and I want to be a motoring journalist in the first place, which is the story. And so we're going to bring back the story, and we're going to get the best storytellers that we can find to help us do it. And so the idea is, as I said, it's the greatest motoring journalists writing the greatest stories we can give them to write in a format that you'll be able to access whenever you like, wherever you like. And we really, really hope, don't we, that that's going to be worth a few quid per month to people.
We hope it will. It's not going to be enormously expensive, a few quid a month, and there'll be introductory offers and so on. I promise you, we will make it worth the money. The quality of the stories, the quality of the writers, the sort of convenience of the delivery.
Yeah.
Bring those things together, and it's going to be, I think, a really good product that's going to be worth every penny. I mean, there are a few other bits and pieces that will be on there. There will be app-only podcasts with guests.
Yeah.
There will be app-only video.
Yes.
However, we're going to carry on doing a weekly podcast for general release like this one.
Yeah.
We will carry on publishing stuff on Instagram because those are our core audiences and we've worked hard to build those audiences and we're not going to abandon them now.
No, I mean, we have 40-something thousand people now following us on Instagram and you know, we know the way the world works. I mean, we would love all 40-something thousand of them to come and give us their money.
Please
do. But clearly an awful lot of them are not going to be in a position to do that. And you know what we're not going to do is just say, well, you're not giving us any money, so you know, bye. We're going to keep that presence going. But if you can, if you are able to give us a few quid a month, there's just going to be so much more stuff.
Yeah.
So it's very much an as well as rather than an instead of. But the as well as is going to be much bigger even than what we've been doing today.
Yeah, the app will be updated on a daily basis. So it's going to be like a rolling news feed rather than weekly or monthly editions.
Yeah.
It's important to say that we're not just taking what we've been doing for the last 2.5 years and sticking it behind a paywall. Okay, everything that we've been doing is like a little teaser, a little appetizer for what will live in that app. The app will carry all of our output in one place, in your pocket or on your iPad. You can also read it on a desktop computer. And it's important to say as well that the app will not carry traditional advertising, right? So there won't be display ads, there won't be pop-ups, there won't be irritating banners, no clickbait.
No clickbait.
None of that
I'm stuff. Leaving if there is.
Yeah, we're bringing back the quality. That is absolutely top of our priority list is to deliver the best quality content that you can get out there.
Proper stories. That's what it's about.
Proper stories. And they're going to be delivered by proper writers, aren't they? So should we run through some of the names that we've got working for us? You and I, okay, that might not be a draw, I don't know. But along with you and I, and we're going to be writing plenty for it and doing our podcasts and video bits, I'm so excited to have Karen Chandock doing some stuff for us.
He's such a good lad.
He's a good lad. Yeah. He's a diehard enthusiast, hopeless enthusiast like the rest of us.
Yeah.
He loves it. Ex-Formula One driver, raced at Le Mans plenty of times. Great driver. We've watched him on board of him, haven't we, at Goodwood?
Yeah.
And he's a phenomenally skillful driver, but he's Sky F1's pundit, and he's incredibly insightful and interesting to listen to. Yeah. And I just can't wait to start reading his stuff.
I mean, he has that balance, doesn't he? Because on the one hand, he's massively enthusiastic, but he's not in the least naive. He understands the way the world works. And he provides those brilliant insights, but in an extremely sort of user-friendly kind of way. And when I first spoke to him, and I only got in touch with him because I thought, well, he's only going to say no, so what have we lost? And the enthusiasm with which he seemed just really touched to be asked. And even when I told him what the word rate was, that didn't faze him. So he's obviously in it for the love. And I'm just, you know, just to have somebody like him, who is such a good guy, such an enthusiast, working for us is just fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, let's rattle through a few more. We've got Henry Catchpole.
Yeah.
He's going to do some stuff for us. I know Henry well. I was at Evo with him for the best part of 3 years. He's a great lad. He's a really, really skillful writer. I think he's a very good storyteller. And he's a handy driver as well. Loves rallying. That's his sport. That's his form of motorsport.
Yeah.
He's got a Mark II Escort rally car.
Fair enough.
Which is a measure of the man. I mean, we can all get along with someone who's got a Mark II Escort rally car.
As long as they let us drive it.
Yeah, well, there we go, Henry. Yeah. So along with those two guys, we've also got a couple of chaps from the previous generation, shall we say. Proper grandees of motoring journalism.
Yeah.
One of them is Mel Nichols.
Yeah, so these two guys, Mel being one, we owe them everything. I mean, Mel was my mentor. Mel Nichols, I'm sure you will know him, but he used to be the editor of Car Magazine in the 70s and in the 80s. And he was one of a small group of people, almost all of them from Australia, funnily enough, who just turned motoring journalism absolutely on its head, because he turned it from being a rather dour information reporting type business into something where there was passion and enthusiasm and stories. Mm. And that's what I grew up on. Like, you know, frankly, it's guys like Mel who are the reason I was here today. A, when I joined Autocar in 1988, he literally taught me how to write a story. But also before that, he just switched me on to cars. And he's still out there. He's still writing great stuff. He's going to be doing some fantastic stories for us, as is Peter Robinson. Now, Peter is another one of what they call the Australian Mafia. He now lives in Sydney. He was Autocar's European editor for years. Before that, he was the editor of Wheels magazine. He has the unique distinction of being the only person ever to be banned from Ferrari for life twice. And he is, the people in the know just say that Peter is the world's greatest motoring journalist, because his eye for the story, combined with his enthusiasm and the clarity with which he can communicate, just puts him in a breed apart, I think. So, those are the two more, how can I put this, veteran.
Our grandfather figures.
Yeah, and as someone who literally wouldn't be here without them, I am touched and thrilled and honored and everything else you could think of to have, just the idea that these guys are going to be working with us.
The experience and the perspective that those two guys bring, I mean, it's immeasurable.
Yeah.
And they can write stories for us that you just couldn't replicate now. For instance, Mel is going to write a piece about meeting Enzo Ferrari. And I just can't wait to read it because, no. I mean, that's just going to be extraordinary, isn't it? And so we've got those two guys. We've got Karen and we've got Henry. Yeah. We've got some others as well. Colin Goodwin is going to be our agony uncle.
Yes.
He'll be reprising his Ask Goodwin column.
Yes.
From Autocar. And that was always fun, wasn't it, that column?
Yes.
People sending in their questions and getting, shall we say, unpredictable answers from Goodwin.
Don't write in asking him what crossover hatchback come SUV you ought to be driving, because he's probably not going to have a very sensible answer for you. But if you've just got something quirky and interesting and fun, he is absolutely your man. Ask Goodwin is a fantastic thing, and I was very, very sad that it stopped, and I'm delighted that we are the people who are going to bring it back.
That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
That's really cool. We've also got Andrew English, who's going to be doing some stuff for us.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew English, chief and latterly pretty much only car tester for the Daily Telegraph for years and years and years. There is no figure at the coalface of motoring journalism today who is more respected than Andrew. Car of the Year jury member, unbelievable knowledge, but not just a dry industry voice. Great bike racer, great car racer, really passionate about the old stuff, really knowledgeable about the new stuff. There's almost not a question you can ask him to which he wouldn't have a really, really considered response. So, I mean, what a resource to have there as well.
That is a lineup, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a lineup.
It's a proper lineup. Yes.
Superstars.
And it's us. And it's really strange that these guys want to, hang out with us. But it's fantastic.
It's great. And there'll be others. We're also going to be championing young writers, the next generation. Yeah. How important is that?
I mean, certainly to me, because, other than guys like Mel, there was no one in the broader industry who was doing anything for the young lads coming through. I don't know how difficult you found it. But, we are determined that if we do anything and we get anywhere with this product, we're going to do it and get there and help some youngsters on the way. Because, apart from anything else, I'm certainly not going to be doing this in, 30, 40 years' time. And we need people who are. So, I just want to do for young people what very few people did for my generation when I was coming through.
So we've got a great roster of writers.
Yeah.
We're throwing the emphasis back onto the story, right?
The story.
And that, I mean, we understand that it's important for some titles to be very focused on the new car launches. That's not what we're going to do.
We will do the important ones.
Yeah,
definitely.
We will, but our focus is going to be on great stories. Mm. The point being, if you're going to spend some... We're all busy. If you're going to spend time reading about cars, you should read a great story about cars.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to try to do. combined with the most modern and convenient delivery.
Yeah.
So that's what we think we've got that's new, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It will cost a few quid a month. There will be offers. But as I've said, I promise we'll make it more than worth your money. It's going to be updated on a daily basis. There'll be app-only video, app-only podcasts. It's going to be really cool, I think.
Yeah. And it's so exciting for me to be involved in something genuinely new, something, you know, somebody who's only ever worked for clients as a freelancer, which I have been, or as a staff member on a magazine, to actually take something that is our idea and just run with it and see what happens. And you know, maybe in 6 months' time, we'll be looking back at this and thinking, what on earth did we think we were doing? But hopefully, if it resonates with us, and certainly everybody that we've spoken to about it in the business has been very kind, and maybe they would be. But it seems that maybe we're onto something. And I think that we can't be faulted, can we, with the quality of the people that we've got around us. And then I think it's just down to you and I to be able to marshal this extraordinary resource that we now have and put it together in such a way that the output is something which is, you know, as good as, if not better than, anything else that is out there, with the obviously the added attraction of being so easily accessed and consumed.
Our readers, ever since the start really of Drive Nation almost 3 years ago, have been have been so generous with their praise, with their feedback, criticism, just engaging with us. I think the name change to the Intercooler went down really well. People were very kind again.
I was talking to somebody yesterday who changed the name of a web-based product they had, and he said he endured months of hell as a result of it. And we haven't. I mean, people have been pretty kind about it, haven't they? And I think that's one of the things we're definitely going to be taking forward to this new product, is that sense of community, that sense of family, the interaction between us, the people who do this, and everybody out there who does the reading of it. It's never felt like you and me just, you know, preaching to whoever, you know, happens to be listening. It's always felt like an entirely interactive experience. And, you know, I would say that with Drive Nation or the Intercooler, it is now probably the most fun I've had with the whole thing, is just looking through people's comments. You know, and things like, you know, we've done some great podcasts, haven't we, which have been based on ideas you and I haven't had.
Yeah.
But which people have just sent in and said, oh, well, you know, really enjoyed your last podcast. Why don't you do one on such and such? And we've gone, well, we'll have that. And that is absolutely what we plan to continue to do. And we want to get these great names that we have somehow recruited involved with our readership. And we will be equally, if not more, involved with them ourselves in the future. And we just want to build this family. Which sounds like a slightly sort of trite marketing type thing to say, but you know, we mean it, don't we? We want it. We don't want it to be us and them. We want it to be all of us together, united in this, you know, in hopefully this fun but interesting thing that we are trying to create.
Yeah, well, there we go. I'm so pleased to get it out there, tell everyone about it. Yeah. We're so excited.
It's been a while.
And we hope you'll come along with us and subscribe. The app is available now to download. You can find out more at theintercooler.co.uk, or just head straight to the App Store and search The Intercooler. Whether you're Google or Apple, you'll find it on there. Download the app. You can do a free trial before paying to subscribe. I promise you, we will make it worth your money. Let's leave that there. That's our news. That's out the way. Let's just quickly address where we are. We're at a friend's car collection.
Yes. Well, don't call it a collection. He doesn't like it being called a collection.
What did he prefer?
I think I got him to accept accumulation.
He didn't like build up either, did he?
No, he didn't like build up, no.
It's just a good spot for us to shoot this video, tell people about what we've got coming up with the Intercooler. But it also sort of says a little bit about the stuff we're going to be writing about, I suppose. I mean, we've got this gorgeous 356 behind us, a couple of very special RS911s behind. The rest of the collection is pretty sensational, and we are going to shoot a separate video of you and I wandering around all the garages, poking around his cars, and that will live on the app. So if you want to watch that, you'll have to download the app. But it's a pretty phenomenal collection, isn't it?
And the most phenomenal thing is, apparently, when the weather's a bit better than it is today, we can go out and drive some of them too.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah.
That, and to be fair, that's another great resource, isn't it? Because we can produce some really cool stories and perhaps videos and podcasts for the app based on some of the cars around here. Okay, well, let's talk about cars. That is going to be
what we're here for.
Yeah, the meat of this podcast. Yeah. We're going to talk about some of the cars that we've been driving recently. Now, you and I have turned up in a couple of quite interesting cars.
Yeah.
And as a two-car garage, it looks pretty great, doesn't it? Sadly, our cars are, they sort of pale into insignificance compared to some of the stuff around here. Even so,
if you've got £100,000 to spend in a two-car garage, I think you're going to struggle to beat what we've turned up in.
Yeah, so you've rocked up in a Defender 90, a new one.
Yeah.
Looks great on those white wheels. They're probably not actually steelies.
No, they are.
They are steelies.
They are, yeah. They really are.
White steelies.
Yeah.
A little truncated thing, isn't it? Because it's a 90, so it looks fantastic. Yeah. I've got my car. My Alpine, which apparently I mentioned too much. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah.
As a two-car garage, that is pretty cool.
I think you might have to have a long Defender because you actually haven't got a practical. You haven't actually got a car with a boot in that.
Well, the other issue is there's no manual gearbox there.
Ooh.
So it might be that the Alpine has to go, or you need a third car. And I think it has to be, I think, an old 911 to go with those three. Old 911, manual box, normally aspirated motor.
Yeah.
It sits in the shed. You use the Defender or the Alpine day to day. That would do me.
Okay, so I'll tell you what, on the old 911 theme. Yeah. Last week, there's a bloke in Chepstow who valets cars, so he lives quite near to me.
Yeah,
and he's an old mate, you know, and he knows Harris. TI22 is his company.
James Walker.
James Walker.
Good lad.
Exactly. Really good lad. And I took our family golf down there because our children left home and they don't live in it anymore. And we just wanted, frankly, the interior to be clean. So I took the call to him. And one of the great things about taking a car to James is you never know what you're going to go home in. And I went home in his late 996 Carrera 2.
Oh, that's where it came from.
Coupe.
Mm.
Yeah. So this is a, what is it? It's 2002, I think. 996 Carrera 2 Coupe, so a 3.6 litre engine. It's done all the miles. It's done like 117,000 miles. And I got in it, and the first thing I realised I'd forgotten about that car, those cars, is that they're quick. Mm. It feels like a 315 horsepower, but it doesn't weigh anything. You know, there's not a GT3 in the world that's ever been built that's lighter than an absolutely standard C2 996. They're really, really light cars. And so that 315 horsepower goes a long way. And it's just got that feel. It feels like a 911. And I mention this now because the 996 is quite easily the most derided of all 911 generations, isn't it? And, you know, we kind of look at them and think, oh, well, that's the 911 you get if you can't really afford a proper 911. But, you know, I just had to completely reevaluate the way I look at those cars, because what I realized is that those late cars, and yes, we know about the engine issues, and yes, of course, you've got to get yourself a good one, or one that's had the mods done to it, and that is, you know, absolutely key and core. But it's absolutely a proper 911. It absolutely deserves to be thought of as such. It was a really, really terrific thing to drive. And, you know, James says that you can buy that car all day and all night for £17,000.
It's not bad, is it?
No, it isn't.
That's really good.
And he said he's had the bore scopes done and everything else, and he says the engine on that car is absolutely mustard. Mm. You know, if you think what modern car you can buy for £17,000. So, yeah, I think we've got to have one of those, haven't we? We've got to have a 911 in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about the 996 here, the RS?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with those cars?
Funnily enough.
Are they good?
I mean, actually that 996 RS is the most hardcore in some respects of all the GT3s. Yeah, I mean, if you went and drove it, I mean, they are uncompromising. They are so stiff. I mean, they are tracked. They are proper track. I mean, they are the most track-focused of all those cars. I mean, obviously, it won't have anything like the power of the more recent cars, but it's a really, really full-on racetrack refugee. Mm. And yeah, I love that. I mean, challenging on a public road, particularly a British public road, a bumpy one.
Yeah.
But fabulous on the track, and so, I mean, such a different order to the, you know, the original 1999, was it, GT3?
Mm.
The first one?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And just because it's here, we have to talk about the black car, which is, I mean, for most people who care about these things, that is the Porsche Motorsport car, isn't it? The last Mesger-engined 911, GT3 RS 4-litre, the 997.
Yeah.
Never driven one. How special are they?
Well, okay, but what you have driven is you've driven the 3.8.
Yes.
Okay. So it's like that, but a bit more. I mean, you know, it is, it's very easy, isn't it, to turn these things into fables. I mean, a 4-litre... I mean, I've always said that, you know, if I could just have one 911, it would be a 3.8 Gen 2 997 GT3 RS. Almost because the 4 litres are so far out of sight, that's not even that's not even on my radar. But of course, it would be the 4 litre because it's it. But it is like the 3.8, but it's just got more mid range. So it's just, you know, you just have all that fun with more power, and it's more accessible too. Mm. And there's also the fact that, you know, it's a very rare and special car too. So it's arguably, it's on a very, very short list of candidates for the greatest 911 ever. And because the greatest because the 911 is itself the greatest sports car ever, well, you know, it's certainly up there on that list too.
Well, as ever, we've been distracted by really exciting older cars when we said we'd talk about the newer stuff. So let me just give us a couple of minutes on that Defender 90 that you've got.
Okay.
I know you like the new Defender, don't you? You're sort of into it.
Yeah, the 90 really is the Defender you shouldn't buy.
Why is that?
Don't buy a 90.
Has it got any space in the back? Is it hopeless or is it?
No, the rear's fine. The rear's the same. I think the rear package is the same as a 110. You just lose the boot. It just doesn't have a boot.
Right.
So you lose your boot, so all your practicality goes out the window. It's not as if you say, I think it's like 65 kilos.
Really?
Lighter. So there's really no, given that the car weighs 2.3 tons, there's really no significant weight. So it's not even that much cheaper. I think it's like 1,800 quid cheaper. So all the, every bit of logic and common sense in your head says, this is not the one to, oh, and obviously it's just 10 times more difficult to get in and out the back and sticking your luggage, but it's just a, But it's just so cool.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like SUVs. I'm not really an SUV kind of guy. And I've just been knocking about in this thing for a week, and it's going tomorrow. And I'm going to be sad. Mm. I'm going to have to go and beg them to have it back, because what is so good about it is it does all that cool stuff. And it's the thing that you just feel really, really good about being in. And that's got the big 3-litre diesel in it. So it just sort of rolls along. But it is sufficiently quiet and comfortable and connected. And I know these things are really, really boring. But if you do, I mean, this morning I got up really, really early because, you know, we are not very close to where I live. You know, a big distance away. And, you know, the idea of a car like a Defender is all very well. But if it doesn't actually do the job, if you can't just sit on the M4 for a couple of hours, you know, or if you do and you get out the other end wishing you'd never got out of bed, then the car has failed. Mm. But it does all that. It rides well enough, it's comfortable enough, it's connected enough, and then you get everything else. I mean, there is no rational, logical thought process behind it, but it's just, I just love it.
Mm. I think it looks cool. And I do think it looks better than the 110. I don't know why.
It does. It definitely does. It's got that Tonka toy.
Yeah, it has.
Hasn't it?
When I was following you in earlier, I just thought it looked fantastic.
Yeah.
I've only driven the new Defender a little bit, actually, but I think it's fantastic. And, yeah, I do wish my other half was into them as well, because then maybe we could complete that dream two-car garage, but she just doesn't like them, sadly. Mm. Okay, well, let's talk about some other cars. We need to discuss the new BMW M3 competition. Okay, it's not often a new M3 comes along.
No.
We've given it a 7 out of 10, which, by any measure, that's a disappointing score for an M3.
For an M3.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a normal car, it'd be fine. Mm.
But a new M3 comes along, and it should be fantastic. It should be a solid 9. We should be wondering if it's a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
But we've both driven this one.
Yep.
We agree. It's 7 out of 10 is fair.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, our 7 out of 10 is probably 8 out of 10 for anybody else, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or 4 out of 5. We always mark harder than anybody else. But you do wonder. I drove it, and I came out of it thinking that this isn't a bad car. It's certainly not a bad car. I think that this is actually quite a good car, but a good car for somebody else, not a car for me. I think it's a good car if you want a car that is really fast. Let's not get into the whole looks argument because, you know, that's been done to death. But yeah, certainly a car that has an awful lot of presence will clear, you know, a lane faster than anything this side of an Aventador. And has got, you know, all the bells and all the gadgets, all the funny screens, all the programming of your engine mapping, your suspension mapping, your gearbox mapping, your steering map, and all that, you know. And it does all that. And I think that there is quite a big constituency of people who are really, really into that sort of stuff. And it's not the car's fault that we're not among them. Mm. What we see is a car that is taller, longer, wider, heavier, 130 kilograms heavier than the last one. We see a car that has lost even the option of a manual gearbox and has lost also the double clutch gearbox from the last car and gained the same 8-speed automatic kind of gearbox that you get in a 7 Series limousine. Mm. And, you know, I can see lots of financial sense in that for BMW. I can see no dynamic sense in that for a person who just loves driving. Nice. And so that's where the disappointment comes from. Mm. Its ride is quite firm. I suspect in Europe, actually, it would be probably just about good enough. The engine is certainly very strong. I think you thought it was slightly less characterful than the last one. I actually didn't mind that because I thought it was a bit more refined. I admire the way that they have kept the turbo lag out of it, and the throttle response is still quite sharp. But I just found myself thinking, is this car better in the ways that are important to me about how an M3 should be better than its predecessor? And time after time, the answer just came back, no, it's not. Mm. And it's also the other thing, it's a lot of money now.
It's a lot of money.
So I drove an M3,
yeah.
Which is the cheaper of the two. There's obviously still the M4 Coupe, and it's £73,700. Mm. Now, the last M3 competition, when it went on sale in 2016, I think it was 56.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you know, inflation hasn't done much since then.
No.
So that's a big stack of price. Yeah. And they'll go, oh, yeah, but of course it's got another 60 horsepower. It does. But it's got another 130 kilograms. Their 0 to 62 times are separated by 0.1 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's not as if you're even buying an enormous amount of additional performance. That extra power, all it's really doing is offsetting the weight gain to get you back to where you were when you started. So it's a good car for somebody else.
There is a sense that BMW M is, or that it has designed and developed that car for somebody other than the hopeless diehard car enthusiast.
Yeah, because there aren't many of us.
It's probably true.
Yeah,
it's probably true.
You can't blame BMW for designing a car its customers want.
Yeah.
It's just not us.
It's just not us. So, we have to just address that we only get the M3 competition in the UK,
yeah.
which is why there's no manual option. The basic
correct
car that other markets have is available with a manual box.
Yeah, and I asked BMW this question, and they said the reason that there's not a manual gearbox is that the uptake by the end of the previous generation was 0.5% of sales. And again, so you completely understand their position. You know, why are they going to go to that when they're not going to sell any cars? The only people who want manual M3s want them when the car is, you know, 10 years old and a quarter of the price, which is great then, but it doesn't help BMW now.
Yeah. And that automatic gearbox, I mean, you do lose something compared to a DCT.
100%.
It's not just shift speed either. No. It's not just shift speed. The shifts are slower, but there's a character, there's a hard-edged nature to a really good DCT gearbox.
It's excitement you're leaving. Yeah. When you're going ba-doom, 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 like
yeah.
that,
yeah,
it's all gone. It's
boom. It's slushy, isn't
it? I found myself, when I was up-changing, just hitting the rev limiter because of the delay between me issuing the instruction and the engine reacting. And I just find myself going... But, you know, maybe normal people don't drive those cars that way. I don't know.
You mentioned the ride. For me, it's too firm. Perhaps I'm getting old, but I now just really appreciate cars that have a supple, fluid ride.
Yeah.
Because it can still handle well. Yeah. If it with that suppleness, it can still handle well.
Yeah.
I think the tension in the new M3's ride, particularly at low speed, probably around town, I think it would wear thin for me.
Mm.
I think it would wind me up. And I'm sure lots of other people would feel the same way as well. There is a flip side to it in terms of agility and precision. It's so hunkered down, that car.
It feels
it's
really
like a
planted.
Solid, stable
planted
platform.
Yeah.
It really is planted.
Yeah.
The previous M3 and M4, I ran one for 6 months in M4. They could be quite frightening cars, actually. They had a wild side.
Yeah.
Traction issues. I found that there were sort of body control issues over undulating roads. And I had a few frightening moments in those cars. Never a problem, never binned one or anything, but no. Got my heartbeat going at times.
Yeah.
And this one is much more composed, much more together.
And very impressive traction.
Yeah, good traction.
Yeah, given us a lot of torque going through the rear wheels alone. But of course, later this year, four-wheel drive.
And a Touring.
The Touring probably won't get to the UK until the end of 2022. So don't hold your breath waiting for that. And again, it just says to me that they're building these cars for, you know, I have absolutely no desire to have a four-wheel drive M3 over a two-wheel drive M3, because there is nothing those additional drive shafts are going to do for that car, which is of interest to me. All it's going to do is make an already heavy car heavier. It's going to provide even more traction when the car itself, as you said, has extremely good traction already. And again, it speaks to this narrative, doesn't it, that they're designing these cars for probably a much larger number of people than the sort of very traditional M3 enthusiast. When you and I think of M3s, we think of E30s and we think of E46s, and, you know, we're dinosaurs. Those cars are gone. Mm. I don't think somebody today seriously thinking about buying a new M3 or M4 comp is sitting there thinking, I wonder if it's going to be as good as a really nicely sorted E46. That's not going to be a thought process they're going to have. And I think you and I sit here and we're quite critical of that car. And I understand why that is, and I would defend every word of it. But I think at the same time, we have to acknowledge that those comments say as much about us as it does about the car.
Yeah, I did a twin test video, new M3 versus the Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio. I know you're a bit cooler on that car than I am.
On the Giulia, yeah.
I think it's fantastic. I love the supple chassis. And I concluded that for me, the Alfa is the more enjoyable car. However, I can just see that most people, the vast majority of people, even a good number of car enthusiasts, would be seduced by the M3, because there's a presence about it.
Yeah.
And if you compare the Alfa's cabin to the BMW's cabin, there's just no contest whatsoever.
It's got a really good cabin, the BMW.
Yeah, it has. And the M3, it's a kind of it car. We're discussing it now. It's maybe not for all the right reasons, but it's so discussed. And I think a lot of people who are in the market for that sort of car just love the idea of an it car.
Yeah. But it's also the other thing I think that people love is just that, whatever you call it, name, M3.
Oh.
What do you drive?
Such appeal.
M3. Yeah. And then instantly, that says something about you, doesn't it? I drive an M3. And that confirms credibility, authenticity, excitement, whatever, upon you. And actually, of course, the only reason it does that is all the stuff that we've been talking about the way that M3s used to be, about, you know, the M3 sprang as a homologation special back in the mid-1980s. And in successive generations, they have built this entire thing into a sub-brand, which today, because of that, has that power. Mm. And people just want to be able to say, when asked what they drive, just say,
M3. And people know what that means.
And that's what it is, rather than, you know, Giulia Quadrifoglio.
Yeah, oh, what's that then? Yeah, you're right. That brand power, that brand appeal is hard to argue with, actually.
Yeah.
However, we know there will be a Touring four-wheel drive version.
Do you think a four-wheel drive Touring M3, given that even if you take the lighter DIN weight rather than the EU weight, the car weighs 1,730 kilograms now, do you think that once you've stuck an estate body and four-wheel drive on it, we're going to see a two-ton M3.
It's very possible, isn't it?
It's going to be close.
Imagine hearing that in 1986 when the original was new. One day, this thing will weigh 2 tons.
I don't know. Who is that good for? It's not good for the driver. It's not good for the environment. Who is that actually working for? A two-ton M3?
Astonishing, isn't it?
Okay, but they haven't done it yet. I'm not saying that they will, but it's not going to be far off.
Yeah. Okay, let's leave the M3 there.
Yes.
Golf R, you've got one coming soon.
I haven't driven it yet.
I haven't driven it yet. I had a good go in it.
I was disappointed by the GTI, as I think we spoke about on a previous podcast. But you're a fan of the R, aren't you?
I do like the R. Yeah, I think it's good. I ran a previous Golf R, which I thought was a fantastic car.
Yeah, it was.
So I got to know, I had it for a year, that car. I must have done 15,000 miles or something in it. And I thought it was brilliant as an all-rounder.
Yes.
not the most engaging, most rewarding hot hatch, but that's not really the point of that car.
But they always did enough of that, didn't
But always
they?
Great to drive, yeah. That's right. This new one, it does lose a little bit. I don't think it looks quite as good. Mm. The previous one was subtle, and it looked fantastic because of it.
Yeah.
This new one, it doesn't quite have the clarity in the steering that I appreciated in the old one. And there is a sense that it just feels a bit heavier and maybe a little bit lazier. I don't know, but there's still a lot to like. I think you need the adaptive dampers, and I'm pretty sure they're optional on that car. But nowadays, in a fast Golf with adaptive dampers, you get this amazing 15-point setting thing where you can just choose your damper mode, one of 15 points, which is 10 more than you need, probably 12 more than you need.
Yeah.
But it's just fun to sort of flick between them. In the softest mode, it's very, very supple.
Yeah.
Actually too lazy for driving quickly.
See, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because the GTI isn't like that. One of my problems with it, and you've got the same system in the GTI, is that I found that if you had on anything more than about 3 out of 15, it was just too firm for British roads.
Really?
And my problem with the GTI was that thing you were talking about it just being so easy to live with. Mm. Back in the 1970s, that's what defined the Golf GTI. It was always the car that didn't need to be the hardest edged, most super sporting one, because actually it was always the one that, even if it wasn't quite the best to drive, it was always really good to drive, and it was always the easiest to live with. And my problem with the GTI, the current Golf GTI, is that it appears to have sacrificed that thing which made a Golf GTI so desirable and unique, and just tried to be a bit more me too, and just tried to sort of go after, you know, the Focus ST or the Civic Type R by being more hard-edged and hardcore, as a result of which, you know, you've got 15 damper settings, but you're only actually going to use the first three. But from what you are saying, the Golf R is actually a bit more broadly defined, and it still does that, relaxed, easy, laid-back, comfortable thing that all good fast Golfs have done.
As far as I can tell, having spent a day in it on a variety of roads, I was struck by how supple and fluid the ride felt in certain damper modes. The new model also has a much cleverer four-wheel drive system with a torque vectoring diff in the rear axle. So now, when you're driving away from the corner, you feel it pushing, driving from the outside rear corner rather than scrabbling away at the front. And it's just a slightly more agile and adjustable thing generally, so it is a bit more engaging to drive.
Oh, I'm really excited to see it. I think I've got one coming in about a week. So,
well, we'll have to have another conversation once you've driven it. You might disagree entirely, and then we'll go from there. But I think it's a good thing. Okay, the last car that I want to talk about in this podcast is the Ferrari 812 GTS.
Oh yes,
because finally I've driven a V12 Ferrari,
and I bet it was a crushing disappointment, wasn't it?
Not at all. I mean, wow, that engine.
What a motor.
It's so special. It's been WLTP'd now, and it's got a particulate filter on it, but it's still a gorgeous thing. Mm. A V12, a high-revving V12, big capacity, it's got to be the sweetest type of engine, isn't it? It's just...
Yeah, yeah.
The way they haul, and it explodes at the top end. I was actually surprised by how loud it wasn't, because... it's got 800 horsepower, that thing. It's a big old 6.5-litre engine. I know this is a GTS, so it's not a GTO or a TDF.
Yeah.
So it's not uncorked.
No.
But even so, it's not obnoxiously loud, particularly from inside the cabin. But it's tuneful. It's musical. Yeah. So it sounds great, just not loud, which is fantastic.
Now, you haven't driven the 812 Coupe.
No.
But that GTS, which I did have a very brief drive in a while back now, it's in that very, very small and strange category of car where, for some reason, the convertible's actually better than the coupe. Mm. And we always say the moment you take the roof off anything, you lose structural rigidity, you gain weight, and the car gets worse as a result. And as a principle, as a theory, that's unarguable. But it has so much charm, that car. I just love being in it. And I didn't need to be driving it, you know, like my trousers were on fire. Just to be in that car with the roof down, wafting about, not going, oh, look at me, just being in it. It was such a sweet thing. And didn't you also feel there was something of the end of an era about it?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
We're not going to have these howling, normally aspirated V12s. No, naturally aspirated. We did a poll on Twitter, didn't we? We must say naturally aspirated.
Yes, you see, I do that. I say normally aspirated all the time, and I shouldn't, because if I think about it, it absolutely should be naturally aspirated.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have to catch each
Should we start calling turbocharged cars
abnormally aspirated?
Yeah.
But they are normal now, aren't they?
Well, they are the norm now, aren't they? Yes. Okay, unnaturally aspirated. There you go.
812 GTS, did you fit? You're tall, you're 6'4 or something.
Okay, I don't remember not fitting. Mm. It's not like an R8 cab.
Mm. Well, you really didn't fit.
Which I really didn't fit. Mm. You know, I didn't do a massive mileage in it. I didn't sort of drive to Scotland or even up through Wales or anything. You know, I had the car for a few hours in the morning. It's possible I was too busy soaking up the sights and the sounds and everything else to care, but I don't remember not fitting. And I am, well, I'm sort of 6'3" on a good day, and you're 6 foot?
6 foot, yeah.
And did you struggle at all?
No, I didn't struggle, but I thought if I was much taller, I might not be comfortable here. Don't My legs it. Felt a bit cramped. Header rail seemed very close.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, a wonderful experience to drive that thing. I really did love it. Well, let's leave that episode of the podcast
there. Happy note.
And it will always be the episode where we announced the Intercooler app.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you guys are as excited as we are about that. And you can now go and download it. So please do that.
Go and have a look. Yeah. See what you think. And, you know, if you don't like it, you can you can stop. But we what we really hope and think and believe is that if you come to us, you'll stay. And that will obviously be entirely your choice. But... we couldn't have tried harder. I don't think that really we could have got a better bunch of people together to be doing it with. I am incredibly excited as a sort of freelancer who spent most of his life, you know, working pretty much on your own, to be back part of a team of people of that quality, that calibre. I just find immensely excited. I feel completely re-galvanised and I just cannot wait to get on with it.
Great stuff. And as far as the podcast goes, we'll be here again next week. No, we won't be here. We're not going to be here next week, sadly.
We'll probably be back on a Zoom call next week.
Back on a Zoom call next week, sadly. But we're going to keep putting these out for everyone to listen to week after week. So make sure you come back next time. And thank you all for watching and listening.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.